All right. Welcome to the Dad the Best I Can podcast. Today, we are lucky to be joined by Maz Jobrani. Maz is a stand-up comedian. He's got a brand new special out called Pandemic Warrior. You can watch it on NBC's Peacock streaming channel. He has a hilarious podcast that I've been completely addicted to called Back to School, which, Maz, maybe the catchiest jingle of any jingle I've ever heard. It just goes in my head all the time. And of course, the reason he's on the show today, Maz is a dad. How's it going today, Maz?
It's going well, Rob. How are you, my friend?
Do you do that jingle? Is that you, or you got a production team?
Yeah, so the way the jingle came about is a while back at the Comedy Store, because I do stand-up comedy my whole life. And so a while back, I don't know if you know Joe Diaz. Do you know Joey Diaz?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so Joey D. So one night, I don't know what happened. I just was on stage doing my act, and Joe Diaz was in the back of the room. And in the middle of my act, he just starts going, Maz Jobrani, oh, Jobrani Maz, Maz Jobrani. So he starts doing it, and I just start dancing on stage. So that just became a thing. So we'd see each other. He'd do that. Jimmy Schubert would just start singing, and I would start dancing. It was like the cue. So when it came time to do the podcast, I was like, what song am I going to do? Should I get someone to design a song? So, you know what I'll do is, since it's Back to School with Maz Jobrani, and the genesis of the show came because my kids would ask me questions I didn't know answers for. So rather than Googling and finding out the answer, I decided to bring on experts, and we'll learn from the experts. And it's just become an excuse, basically, to talk to really interesting people. But that said, I said, why don't I have my kids just sing the jingle, and I'll sing with them. And so if you listen to the jingle at the beginning, it's the kids and myself just going, Maz Jobrani, oh, Jobrani Maz, I got a podcast. It was just being silly.
Yeah.
And yeah, it kind of does stick in your head. I've actually had people write me and be like, could you change the jingle for yourself? Like, it annoyed them.
It's stuck in my head, but it always makes me happy and it gets you excited to listen. So the podcast, I love the idea of starting a podcast to talk to interesting people, because that's the genesis of this podcast. Is I have an 8, 6, and 3-year-old, and I was, when I had 3 young kids, just kind of swimming in it, losing my mind, thought, let me talk to other dads. And it was so refreshing to hear that they were going through it too. Maybe on the outside, they look like they had it together, but they're telling me stories about their kid throwing the video game across the room. And I was like, thank goodness. It's not just,
you know,
me.
The more we talk to each other, the more we realize how similar our experiences are. And I say that as a stand-up as well, because sometimes you'll say, oh, this happened to me. You start telling a story and you're doing the jokes in the middle of it. And then you look in the audience and they're laughing, but there's always a few people that are laughing harder than everybody. And you go, oh my God, they've experienced this. So human experience is a common experience. We all have the same experience. So you're right. When you're in it, you think you're the one, you're like, oh my God, I'm sinking. I'll never get out of this. I mean, it happens at every phase with your kids, right? It happens when they're newborns. It happens when they're toddlers. It happens when they're adolescent. It happens when they're teenagers. It happens probably later. I mean, it's like everything that my friends are going through, their kids are in college, I'm going to be going through. But when you're in it, you think, God, I'm the only person that's ever experienced this. But then you step back and talk to somebody and they go, yeah, my kid used to pee on my computer as well, or whatever it was, you know. So we're all in the same boat, my friend.
Absolutely. Well, what I found is that moms talk about this stuff. And I had my guy friends before I had kids. I didn't know dads were speaking about it. So it's been that's been a real breakthrough, and kind of like the goal of the podcast is to open up the conversation for dads to just talk about their day-to-day stuff that they're kind of, you know, really talking only their wife about.
I think that's a great thing, but also I think that we are now in the era and in the generations where dads are talking. Like, I know, for example, when I talk to dads who have newborns, I kind of just give them a little encouragement. I go, hang in there. It's going to get a lot different, a lot easier before you know it. And they talk back. They go, oh yeah, man, it's been so crazy. And you know, there's a lot of things you learn in this journey, whether it's what your wife is going through, which is very different than what the dad is going through, because your wife just gave birth. You just showed up and videotaped it, you know, so it's a different thing, or what the kid is going through, or, you know, so I think more and more dads are open now to talking about these things.
Yeah, it's good. And it's, I mean, I also like the idea of how your podcast started, of your kids asking you questions. I got a little story for you that happened to me this week, and I want to hear your thoughts on it. So we're in the car where a lot of the best conversations happen, I think, because everybody's strapped in and you're not eye to eye looking at each other. And my 6-year-old son, the middle child, he just out of the blue, he's like, "Dad, what was it like when you were a kid? What was it different? Were the houses like this?" And I had to stop and think about it because I'm looking at the buildings and the houses. I said, they looked about the same. The cars were more or less the same. What was the difference? And the only thing I could come up with on the spot was we didn't have the internet and we didn't have these phones. And while they're incredible, I was like, yeah, if we didn't know something, we had to pull out the letter R encyclopedia and look it up or go to the library. But it was interesting because I thought our life didn't seem that different, but it's incredible that being able to talk on a Zoom call like this or listen to a podcast and these things, how big of a change it is. I see with their video games, which we'll talk about in a little bit, drive me absolutely crazy. But what are your thoughts? Like, I know, so you were born in Iran, is that right?
Yeah, I was born in Iran in 72, moved to America late 78, right as the protests were happening that led to the Iranian Revolution. Grew up in Northern California. So I was a foreigner, but I had also learned English in Iran because I went to an international school. So when I came, for me, it was probably easier to adjust than it was for my parents who didn't speak the language. And once they did speak the language, they spoke with an accent. So they stood out. And then the hostage crisis happened and I was in school at that point. And so there was a lot of stuff. It was funny because when you first said your son said, what was it like back in the day that was different? You should have been like, well, back in the day, we didn't ask stupid questions like that. but no, it is a different world. I was just thinking about that maybe this morning where I was thinking, geez, you know, every one of my kids, both, I mean, I have a 12-year-old son and a 10-year-old girl. And in our house, everyone's got their own computer or their own tablet or a combination of thereof. And I was thinking when I first even started college, I started college in 1989 and computers weren't that prevalent yet. And so I remember my sister and I both, she transferred into UC Berkeley and I started as a ninth grader. And I remember we would both handwrite our essays. You know, there was like whatever, 4 or 5 page essay, you'd handwrite it. And then we would take it to this place and you would give it to them and pay them whatever it was, 20, 30 bucks. And they would type it for you on a word processor. And that's how we first started. My first year in college, we would handwrite and do it like that. And then as the years went by, suddenly we had access to computer centers and you'd go to the computer center with your disk and you'd type it out. So it is, it's a much different world. But going back to what you said, because it all kind of leads to what you said about when I had Jordan Shapiro on my podcast, and he's a psychologist and author. He'd written a book about screen time for kids. And his theory was that screen time isn't as bad for kids as we all think it is. One thing that he pointed out, which was interesting, he said, look, throughout history, the previous generation has always thought that something new in the new generation is going to be harmful to kids. So he talks about, and he does a TED talk where he says, supposedly when people started writing things down, Socrates thought that was a threat to people's minds because he was saying, well, if we're going to write it down, then we're not using the words and we're not remembering things. So just writing things. He said also there was a theory back in the day that if kids sat by the windows of a train, that's bad. When they were looking out the window as the train's going fast, that's bad for their brain. So there's always been these theories. And that's not to say, by the way, that screen time can't be bad for kids. We know that it can be. You know, there was a documentary on Netflix a while ago. I don't know what happened to it, but it was about a bunch of kids. I think it was in Korea, who had gone so deep in their screen addiction, their video game addiction, where the parents were saying that the kid just stays in the room all day playing this video game, and they would have these people show up and take them to these almost rehab centers where they would have an intervention. So, you know, I think what Jordan says, and I'm trying to apply this a little bit, is that technology's coming, change is coming, it's here. And so we could either fight it or we can join it and go with it. We're in technology. We're using these screens right now. We use our phones, right? So what's different from when we were kids and when they're kids, they have access to this stuff all the time. So why not embrace it and say, okay, go ahead and play your video game, but let's set a time. What do you think is a good amount of time? 20 minutes, 30 minutes? Let's do that. And then let's make sure afterwards that we go for a walk in the neighborhood, or let's go outside and play. Teaching kids the responsibility to look after themselves and not be slaves to their phones or their tablets, which is easier said than done, but I'm trying as much as I can. Now that my son's 12 and my daughter's 10, I tell them a lot of times, I go, guys, I mean, they'll walk into the kitchen sometimes because they've been doing Zoom school. They'll walk in and say, oh, can I have a cookie for snack or whatever? And I go, stop asking me, because I'm not going to be with you 24 hours a day. I go, you make your own decisions. And I said, what did you have earlier? Did you have something earlier that was sweet? Then maybe you shouldn't have something now. You decide. And I say, similarly, I go, just know that whatever you put in your body is going to have results down the line. So that also goes with screen time. Sometimes my son, I know school's finished and he kind of is MIA. So I'll go to the bottom of the stairs because his room's upstairs. And I go, hey, Dara. Yeah, what are you doing? I'm about to be done. I'm coming down. And then he'll come down. I go, what were you doing? I was, whatever, on a chat with some friends. I go, how long were you on? Oh, whatever. If he says it's a long time or 45 minutes, I go, is that too much, you think? Or what do you think? Yeah, you're right. So I'm trying to plant the seeds in their heads to manage it themselves, because I know I'm guilty of it. You and I were talking about Clubhouse, which is that app that's a very addictive app. But sometimes I catch myself and I go, I gotta put this thing down. I gotta look up and look around. And so ultimately, the world is very different, but that doesn't mean we should abandon or deny the difference and try to, imprison our kids in something that we think was better back when we were kids, So that's kind of a long answer to say, we work with the kids in a collaborative way to teach them how to handle all this new stuff.
That's a good way to look at it, because it is the words that you choose, the way you frame it, the dialogue is so important, because it can be, they're not going to listen to a lecture. They're going to tune you out immediately. So kind of maybe even thinking about before, how am I going to present this? And you're coming at it with a, what do you think? Is six Oreos a little too much? Mine are a little younger. I don't know how yours were then, but as they get older, laying that foundation, that is important. I think what I'm guilty of too is, I'm sure every parent has said this, in my day, we had cartoons on Saturday morning. You guys have infinity Netflix choices. Just pick a show. So it's like we were trying to relate to when we were kids, but they're not living in that world. They have no context for, they're like, well, we have Netflix. So what do you expect us to do?
Yeah, I'll tell them in an entertaining way sometimes, like, oh my God, you guys are so lucky you could do all this stuff. We used to have to go to the video store, rent the video, return it on time. I'll tell them in an entertaining way. I try not to necessarily get into, unless if it's almost like a teasing, right? If they're really whining about something, I'll go, guys, come on, that kind of thing. I was recently on a hike with my son, and I think teaching them empathy is very important as well. So my son's just naturally empathetic, and my daughter is getting better and better at it. My son is just by nature, but my daughter's, learning it. But we were on the hike and he was acting a little lazy, and he's actually a good athlete, but he was kind of complaining about the hike. And I said, Dara, I said, look around you, man. I go, look, you're out in these beautiful LA mountains, beautiful air, beautiful day. I go, you know what's going on? Like, there's kids, escaping from Syria or wherever they're coming from, walking across desert. And I didn't have to go any further. He's just right away, he's like, oh, you're right. And it, just placing that in their heads a little bit without necessarily, I don't think that it's going to have an immediate result, but I think it's going to have, if I just continue to point those moments out, eventually, I think they start to see the world like that. And they go, oh my God, they check themselves. You ultimately want to give them the gauge, right? You check yourself. I'm not going to be there to check you all the time. So you're right. The Oreo cookies is a great example at your, you know, 6-year-old's age. So he's got 5 Oreo cookies in his hands and it's like, hey, buddy, you know, let me ask you a question. Like, do you think those cookies are going to go away? No. Are you hungry? Yeah. Did you have good food? You know what I'm saying? Like, there's questions to ask him to put it on him or her, your daughter, so that they feel the responsibility. I think ultimately our goal as parents, the first goal is to give them love, because giving them love is what instills their confidence and what makes them, you know, be good people in life. I think that's number one. And then a big second point is to give them, teach them independence. So there's a lot of times where they'll ask me a question and I go, I don't know, what, you know, how would you do that? What do you think? And I kind of put it in their court. I have a hard time sometimes letting them be independent. I just had my son change the inner tube for his tire. And I remember when I was around his age, we used to ride around on dirt bikes and I learned how to change the inner tube on my tire. Well, you know, we're this era now where you just go down the street and pay the guy and he does it. But I said, let him do it. And I said, look, I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to supervise. And as he's doing it, every move that he makes that's wrong, I'm like, ugh, and I want to get in there. But I'm trying hard to just be like, okay, no, okay, what do you think? What? Look at that again. Does a screw go back there or there? Do you remember? And I did a pretty good job of standing back. But letting them learn, letting them do, letting them make mistakes, those are huge, huge things that I think we all have to do. And in this world of micromanaging, we forget sometimes.
Yeah. And it's hard. It's like goes against our nature. Cause a lot of times I want, you know, the kid, we're running late for school, tie your shoes. I want him to tie his shoes, but I'm also like, you know, your blood is boiling. Let's go already. So you do have to really check yourself and say, what am I really trying to accomplish here? If we're a few minutes late because he has to fail trying to tie his shoes, eventually I do tie them, I can't lie, but I'm going to let him, you know, like you said, I think getting your kids more comfortable with failing a little, because everything does seem it's coming so easy. You can just, you know, Google or get on a game. And I'm trying the same thing, kind of ask them when they ask me a question, well, what do you think is about the answer?
Also, when you give them the independence, sometimes they surprise you. I mean, cooking is a big example of that. Obviously you don't want them turning on the flame. But if you go in the kitchen, you go, all right, let, you know, whatever, we're going to make, I don't know, oatmeal or something, and you get to decorate the oatmeal, right? Or you get to take the oatmeal out of the pan now that it's not hot anymore. You put it in and you get to choose what fruits we're going to put on. I want you to do this. Sometimes they'll surprise you. Sometimes they'll do things that you thought, like you think they're going to go put chocolate chips in there, but they come back with little raspberries or something. Oh, good, you put fruit in there. Way to go. So you give them the responsibility. I was trying to teach my daughter that too, because my daughter would sometimes be talking to her friends and be like, do this. And I said, listen, one thing that you should try, I said, rather than telling people how to do everything, if you guys give each other your tasks and then step back and see if they surprise you. I said, a lot of times you're going to be surprised. There's this idea, you know, I heard this interview one time early on in when the kids were younger, and this guy was some guy had written a book, child psychologist, and somebody came on and called in and said, hey, my daughter's 8 years old and she's a great student. She's a great girl. But every time she leaves the house, her room is a total mess and we don't know how to get her to clean her room. And the guy goes, oh, she's 8, huh? He goes, yeah. And he goes, well, it might be too late to teach her that. And he goes, what do you mean? He goes, if you think about it, we're one of the, you know, countries, these Western countries where our kids aren't working at the age of 5 or 6 or whatever. There's countries in the world where there's child labor and the kids are working at a young age. So they're learning how to, you know, be responsible, even though it's not a good thing to have your children working in a factory, that they're learning a responsibility. So he says, I encourage parents to teach their kids at the age of 2 or 3 to make their beds in the morning. Now he goes, the truth is, they're not going to know what they're doing. They're going to mess it up. You're going to be doing most of the work, but they're going to get this feeling that they're making their bed. And if you start there, he goes, then it just, they grow up a little bit and they get better at it and they learn the responsibility. So I, with my kids from an early age, I said, every morning, make your bed. And I said, it's good feng shui. And I said, all that stuff. So that's all about giving them responsibility and having them feel this accomplishment. And I think that that helps them then once, you know, if you start with making the bed, then 10 years later, when you're saying, I want you to manage your own time on your phone, they at least have had success with something and they've shown that they can do it. And now let's translate that into this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's very smart, because I do remember my dad was very handy. He would, you'd almost get the move, I'll figure it out. And it kind of, it didn't teach me to, you know, struggle through these things. And I like also what you said about doing it in these lower stakes situations where if they spill the oatmeal and they make a mess, not really a big deal, but I can see how excited they get. Is that something, I mean, I know you grew up in an immigrant family, that you learned from your parents? How much different was it growing up, and what are something that maybe that you learned from your dad?
I think, you know, my dad, the one of the things that he taught me, so I was the oldest son in the family. My sister was older, but then I was the oldest son. And my culture is a very patriarchal culture. And my father had been the oldest son in his family. And he had actually taken care of his family in many ways, because his father, my grandfather, my dad's dad, had passed away when my dad was young. And again, our culture, the Iranian culture, similar to what you would see like with the Italian culture, where, you know, family is very important and they're very close. The Latino culture, we're very Mediterranean, all that stuff. The family's close, very important. Got to take care of your mother, got to take care of your siblings. So me being the oldest brother and having two younger brothers, my dad used to put that on me a lot, where he would say, you know, I would be whatever, 10, 11, 12, going out to play with my friends, go play kickball, go ride our bikes, whatever. And he would always say, take your brother. And so my brother was 5 years younger than me, and I had another one that was 7 years younger. And I hated it. I hated having to take him, because everyone else is there having a good time and I got to watch this kid. But it did definitely put some level of responsibility on my shoulders, taught me to be mature, a lot more mature at a young age than a lot of my other friends were. You know, I think I was probably, I guess I must have been 10 watching a five-year-old. And I just, I think it gave me this sense of, you know, being able to do that kind of stuff. And throughout my life, I've been, even when I had my babies, you know, when we had our first kids, I felt confident taking care of them, because it's almost like I'd already raised my brothers. I mean, my youngest brother says that. He goes, I feel like you were like a father to me more than just a brother. So there's some pressures that come with that, because then you feel like, oh my God, I got to be your dad. But at the same time, the individual growth that you have is it's far more advanced than kids who have everything done for them. Going back to what you were saying about tying your kids' shoes, you know, my son, obviously, you know, since he was a younger kid, I was teaching them how to do that. And they also, there's a, tying your shoes is a sense of accomplishment. They go, oh my God, I can tie my own shoes. But to this day, when my son plays club soccer, there's a couple of kids on the team, they're 12 years old now, who will run to the sidelines and have their parents tie their shoelaces. And I'm going, Dad, you shouldn't be doing that. Like, let the kid learn. You know, similarly, I've seen parents sometimes spoil their kids when the kid turns 16. They go, oh, here's a brand new, whatever, BMW or some nice car. And I go, what? I go, wait, why are you doing that? This is, let the kid earn some money and go buy some junk car. You can chip, you can help buy the car, but don't set them up for this. Don't do everything for them. And we see that a lot. I mean, we've seen, there's a great book called The Price of Privilege, which talks about these kids who grow up in privilege and how nobody acknowledges their problems until it's too late. So this lady was in Marin County, where I grew up, and she said, you know, these kids are all rich, so you would think that you know, theoretically speaking, you would think that kids in a lower income group would have more problems than these kids who have everything at their disposal. And she said that's not true at all. And she said a lot of these kids, first of all, they have people on the poor end of the scale and the high end of the income scale have a lot in common because they both have parents who aren't around as much. The poor parents are working. The rich parents are off, you know, traveling or running companies or whatever it is. The poor people live in a neighborhood where they have access to drugs. The rich kids have access to drugs. And she said they are, those two have a lot in common. Now, she said the place where we find some healthier relationships are parents who, it's not even an income thing, but parents who are involved in, you know, having, she said, even eating dinner with your kids at a table just reminds them that someone's caring, someone's listening, someone's watching you. So don't go doing, you know, stupid stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, I forget what the question, you said, I'm kind of wandering here a little bit. What was the thing you said right before this?
We were talking mostly about, you know, your dad kind of empowering you and creating that self-reliance and getting kids to figure things out themselves.
Yeah, so that's what I was getting at. So I was getting at the thing of parents doing things for their kids. So I don't know if it was this book or where I read, but I read somewhere where it said that these parents, these kids would be, I think, either done with college or they were still in college, but they were at a job interview and they were interviewing for the job. And at some point the mom like called in to the interview, basically put me on speaker and let me talk. And don't do that. This kid will never learn to be independent. You know, I can't emphasize that enough. You know, I let my kids, we live in LA and near some big streets, and I let my kids bike sometimes to go do stuff. And I get nervous because I'm going, oh my God, are they old enough? Are they old enough? I go, they kind of aren't yet old enough. But at the same time, I go, this gives them this sense of independence. So they're going to be as street as possible. They're going to be as city as possible if I let them do this. If I don't let them do this and I drive them every time and I sit outside and I, you know, have them on a leash, these kids are never going to learn. So that's what I was getting at, is just independence is huge.
Yeah. And I wonder where that comes from. It seems like that's our anxiety. It's like about us, whether we want to see them get that job or we want to see them make the team, where it's, we just have to get more comfortable with, and it's hard, right? Watching your kid cry or fail at something, your instinct is to put out the fire, say it's going to be okay. But I think, like you were saying, you get so much more out of just sitting in it and letting them feel that a little bit. It's funny. I spoke to my dad last night on the phone, and we ended up talking for like 40 minutes, which was super cool because I think more and more about time and the amount of times you're even having these conversations as your parents get older. And sometimes I'll kind of throw him some, we'll talk about, he had me when he was a lot younger. So he'll tell me a story about, he was 28 years old. I'm 44 now. So it's like just even thinking in those terms, but he's a psychologist too. And he says he remembers when he was a kid, his parents would pretty much say, you go out, ride your bike, go play in the woods, come back at, you know, dinner time. And I asked him, you know, that seems like a better way, you know, a better childhood, a better way to cultivate this kind of thing. But I wonder why this generational shift, is the world that much more dangerous, or is that a lot of hype? Like, is it just our anxiety that our kids can't go ride their bikes across the street?
Yeah, I've heard the opposite, that we live in a safer world now than we did back when we were kids. Mm-hmm. But number one, like you said, now with all the ways you can track your kids, there's a lot more anxiety because, going back to what you said early on, back in the day, there was a telephone and the kid would go out and you'd say, be back by X, Y, and Z time. Now they have these phones. You can text them. Where are you? You can track them. They, you know, all day long, you know where they are. You're thinking about them. And so there's good and bad that comes with that. Obviously, it's great to be able to just put you at ease in terms of, and for them to know that you're caring and you're watching. But at the same time, it is our anxieties. And it's also, again, this lady says in that book, she says, there's age appropriate times for the parent to get involved. So when your kid is 4 years old and they come home from school and they have their clothes bin has been ripped apart and you go, what happened? I got in a fight with so-and-so. Well, your kid's four. So you call the school, what's going on? Let me talk to the other parent. You know, you set that up. Mm-hmm. When your kid comes home and they're 15, what happened? Oh, my test and they're down. What happened? I missed five answers on the test and I ended up getting a B minus or whatever, but I thought I had done it. I think the answers were right. So if you pick up that phone and call the teacher, hey, my kid is saying this and this, you're crippling your child. Mm-hmm. The best thing to do is say, okay, go advocate for yourself. Go sit down with a teacher, contact them, go talk to them and see what they say. You know, just the other day I was playing tennis with my son and there was another court next to us and this teacher was teaching this kid that was around my son's age and hit my son's level. And my son's been dying to play with someone at his level. And he came over to me and said, hey, daddy, that guy seems like he's about my level. You think he'd want to play with me? I go, I don't know. Go ask. Mm-hmm. So he goes over to the coach and he's kind of hemming and hawing. He's like, excuse me, I just wonder if, you know, I noticed he's about the same level as I am. And I don't know if he's available. And the coach is like, are you asking if he can play with you? And my son's like, yeah. He's like, well, then just ask it. Mm-hmm. But it was great to hear the coach say that to him because now my son is the one arranging this and learning. Just get to the point. Don't be afraid. I could have gone over and been like, excuse me, can mm-hmm. we? No. I said, you go do it. And so those things, tiny as they are, they're setting them up to be independent and successful in this world.
That's so true. My kids will, when we would be at McDonald's or something and they'd want a different toy. I'm like, I'm not going to deal with it. But if you want to go up to the register and ask that lady and I'll watch them go do it and come back with a toy and that feeling, that sense of accomplishment and the fact that they could talk to a grown up like that. I'm like, I'm at McDonald's, they're eating garbage. And that's my dad moment of the year right there to have them have the nerve to go up there. I'll even do that. My three-year-old daughter at the playground, she's hanging on me most of the time. But if we see another kid, you know, it's go, you know, ask if she wants to play and she'll be nervous. And maybe I'll like walk her over there and introduce them. And all of a sudden they're running around. So I think that's, you know, give them the little push, but really empower them. And I think, again, it comes down to like being okay with watching them be uncomfortable, which is easier said than done.
Yeah.
Oz, you've given us a ton here on the Dad the Best I Can show. We like to do one dad tip. Do you have a tip for other dads?
You know, this is a new one that I've kind of discovered that I didn't realize I was doing, but I've done it. It's I would encourage you to get tennis lessons for your kids and for yourself. And the reason is I liked tennis as a kid. It wasn't my number one sport. My number one sport was soccer. But I kind of would play tennis a little bit here and there. But once the kids were old enough and they love tennis, they just get out there and hit that ball. And I'm watching them. And then I was like, oh, let me get back into tennis. So I started taking some lessons again and I've gotten decent now. So the reason tennis or maybe golf or any sport that you can play later into life, because those are sports that you can play with your kids. So I end up spending sometimes an hour, sometimes more between coming and going. It'll be 2 hours with the kids doing a sport, which has been great. I mean, eventually they're going to get much better than me and maybe I won't be able to hang in there, but at least I can hit the ball a little bit with them because the other sports like soccer, basketball, swimming, whatever that other one is, they're going to be doing it with their own age group. But the tennis or the golf, I can't think of a third one right now, but these are sports that skiing, if you can do skiing is fun. Find sports that you can do into later in life so you can continue to have reasons, just organic reasons to hang out with them because they're going to want to go off. But if you could be like, hey, I can ski, let's go together.
Yeah.
You know, that's a pointer I can put out there right now.
I like that. I have been waiting to get my kids skiing selfishly so I could get out there and have people to ski with. But I love that idea. I think the other thing that goes with that is I'm busy running around coaching these kids and coaching their baseball, coaching their basketball. We drove by the tennis courts the other day. And they're like, Dad, didn't you used to play tennis? When do you? And I was like, you're right. We put ourselves second in so many ways that we should be not only playing with them, but modeling that, look, dad has his own life too. He can go do stuff. So,
and I'm telling you, it's been a great discovery. I didn't even think about it. I just authentically did it because they were taking lessons. I started taking lessons. And obviously when they were younger, when they were 3 years old, they were, you know, I couldn't really play with them. I could, I'd go out on the court. Even then I'd go out on the court and like hit it softly. And It was a fun little time to spend with them. But as they grew and they've gotten better and better, now we actually go out there and play. Or even with the skiing, when we first started with skiing, they were doing lessons all day long. My wife doesn't ski, so if we're away on a ski vacation, I might ski 1 or 2 days out of a week and then spend the rest of the time with my wife or do other stuff. But now that the kids actually ski, when we go on our vacation, I'm on the mountains with them because they don't need the lessons anymore. So we're together skiing down different things and just having a blast. So find things you can do in the later in life with them. Maybe you like chess, maybe you like backgammon or something like that. Get them into that stuff if you're into it, so you can sit down and organically spend time with them, as opposed to, like you said, watching them on the sidelines and then just driving them to get their food or whatever it is. You want to be, you know, in with them.
And it's fun for us too. We have to remember. Yeah. I think that's the other thing. Dads, we almost lose our sense of identity and self. So I think we need to, I love that one. And I do play tennis, but I think I'm going to play it with the motivation that I want to have something to play with these kids.
Do it.
Maz, this was a ton of fun. Tell people where they can find your stuff.
People can find me on every social media. It's at Maz Jobrani, MazJobrani. I'm now on Clubhouse like you are. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube channel. And also, as you were saying before, my special is called Pandemic Warrior. It's on NBC's Peacock. And my podcast, listen and subscribe to the podcast, Back to School with Maz Jobrani, anywhere podcasts are found.
Yeah, the clips are great. I just watched the baby shark joke, and I could totally relate to it. I haven't heard like a 4-minute baby shark breakdown, but hilarious. My kids are still obsessed with that trash, and I can't stop playing it, but
yeah,
it's fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Maz, thank you so much. It was a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Rob. Have a great day.
All right, see ya.
Bye-bye.